Hello and good morning. Happy Juneteenth. Happy belated Father's Day to all you friends and fanatics of all ages out there. My name is Paul Boyer, and this is Phillies Therapy. How are you? How are you feeling? The Phillies have been playing good baseball lately, haven't they? You know, it's funny. Every week, Matt and I get ready to record this show, and every week, it seems like the mood and the tempo of the whole thing just dramatically changes from one week to the next, from good to bad to good to bad. Not so this week. Nuh-uh. We got two good weeks. That's right. That's a streak. The Phillies have won six straight of their own. Speaking of streaks, they have won a whole bunch of their last, what are they, like 10-2 in their last 10 and more than that? They're on fire right now. They're 13-2 in their last 15 games. Not that it's made much difference in the division. We'll talk about that later. They're playing good baseball. They're beating the teams they're supposed to beat and even taking it to a couple of other contending teams. So let's bring in Matt. Matt, who has just finished up his latest news and notes for The Athletic, which should be going up around the time you're listening to this podcast. Matt, the Phillies are playing good ball against both good and bad teams. I personally can't shake the feeling that something is still a little bit off, but I think for normal brain people out there, you have to be feeling pretty good about where this team is at, right?
You're usually far more optimistic than I am.
I know.
They've had 2 6-game winning streaks this month, which was right after a 5-game losing streak.
Right.
I mean, they really are. It's probably one of the streakiest teams I think I've ever been around. The entire season has been, I feel like, a sort of a season of streaks. I guess outside of like the middle of April was kind of back and forth, but I think this was an impressive road trip. I mean, it was a road trip they could have very easily gone undefeated on. I mean, think about it. The only game they lost was the first game of the trip, that 9-8 game. Cody Clemens missed a go-ahead homer by probably about 2 feet. And that was the bullpen game where,
right.
Just a lot of things didn't go right. But, you know, they scored 8 runs, and you're like, oh, they were pretty close to winning a game. Then they win the next 6. And, you know, say what you will about Oakland, they're not very good. But the Phillies won 2 of those games without Castellanos. He's probably been their best hitter the last, I don't know, maybe the entire season, most consistent hitter.
Right.
Bryce sat the last day to get him a little respite, and they still squeezed it out. They won a bullpen game, it became a bullpen game because Chris Sanchez got hurt, took the ball off his pitching
game. Off his wrist, yeah.
12 innings, and they got, and Paul, I want to know, like, where does Andrew Vasquez throwing 22 pitches and all 22 being sliders in the 9th and 10th inning of a game that the Phillies win on the road in extra innings, where does that rank in the pantheon of recent Phillies bullpen performances, maybe in like the last decade? That was a real sicko performance right there.
They will speak of that day like they speak of Lance McCullers in the World Series. They will speak of it from mountaintops through bullhorns and megaphones. They will preach it and teach it in pitching classes around the nation. Look.
22 sliders, no fastballs, amazing.
There's a point of diminishing returns with this stuff that I guess he didn't hit. And you watch this and you have to wonder, like, I know it's Oakland, these are major league hitters, and you have to know at a certain point after, I don't know, the 12th consecutive slider, that you're probably getting another one on the 13th, whoever you are, whatever turn in the order you're at. And yet they couldn't do anything with it. They couldn't sit. I don't look great. Okay. Andrew Vasquez frustrates me. Maybe we can take a diversion into something like that.
That's great.
Because I look at him and what he does.
Yeah.
And I see that there is faith in the front office, and I can look at how he throws the ball and the way his stuff moves. And I'm like, okay, yes. This is a like a back office pickup. This is somebody who models had to love, and they're just like, yes, take the chance on this guy. And sometimes you see it more than others. He started off the year with like 2 swinging strikes in his first 100 pitches or something like that. And you're just like, what is this guy going to do? Like, well, what are we doing here? And he's been better lately, and I can't really figure out why, because he throws one pitch and they can't do anything with it. Like, I don't get it. That's why it frustrates me. I don't get it.
No, I don't either. I mean, the one pitch is sort of 3 different pitches, right? He does it from different arm slots, and he has ways of kind of manipulating that slider. And so, Yeah, I mean, you give him credit, but it's sort of you don't give him credit because this was a guy that they claimed on waivers last August, then 2 weeks later DFA'd him because they needed a roster spot, then claimed him again on waivers. So, I mean, like, you give him credit for that. They obviously liked him. Like, 4 days after World Series, I think it was, they claimed him again on waivers. And I don't know, the way I look at Paul is, I mean, he's, would you rather him or, like, you know, 30 innings from David Hale? I mean, he's essentially, you know, the last guy in the, he's been the last guy in the bullpen for most of the season. And he's been like a one win pitcher for them already. I mean, that's some real value right there for a waiver claim last guy in the bullpen. He's pitched well for them.
Yeah. You know, and I do have to give him credit for that. I really do, because there are worse ways to use a roster spot like that. See Dylan Covey. Look,
The Cove.
I say I'm frustrated by Andrew Vasquez mostly because I'm humbled by Andrew Vasquez. I thought I had him pegged as like, all right, whatever. I don't really need to care too much about this guy. And he's come along in the last couple months and pitched reliably well. Never in a big spot, or at least very rarely in a big spot.
So past weekend was a big spot.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It wasn't technically a save situation, but yes, it kind of was.
And he got the win.
He did. Really, it's more a matter of humility and my own pride in thinking I've got somebody evaluated, and no, actually, I don't. The people who assemble the team
continuously humbles you. Yes, this game continuously humbles you, whether you play it or you watch it or you write about it.
No, but it's good. It's good. It's a good development. It is an objectively good thing that Andrew Vasquez has been pitching well for as long as he has been pitching well at this point. I have to give them that. My own personal feelings and confusion aside, it's a good thing. There is some confusion, I think, since we've brought up Mr. Dylan, some confusion as to what exactly Dylan Covey's role is now, because Vasquez can pitch long, or at least multiple innings. He's proven that. And so we have a bulk guy who has a little bit, there's a little bit less of a need for him now, assuming Chris Sanchez is healthy, because he is a quote bulk guy, but can start game. The pitching, the roster construction is just kind of a mess on the whole. But what do we do with Dylan Covey now? Because we have Andrew Bilotti down in the minors. We have like these other guys who could probably be more effective. Bilotti has proven he could be more effective. What's the deal with the bullpen and the way it's being constructed right now, especially now that Sir Anthony is going to be out for a couple of weeks?
Yeah. I mean, things changed in the last few days because you lose Dominguez, and now all of a sudden, Junior Marte, who ended up picking up the save Sunday and he also looked got two great big outs for them Saturday, is probably right. I mean, you list your righties right now in the bullpen. Kimbrel is the most trusted guy, and Junior Marte is probably your second most trusted right-handed reliever right now. And that's not to speak ill of Marte, but I mean, they literally sent him to the minors last week to keep Dylan Covey on the roster because Marte was the only guy with options. So it's a weird construction for sure. Mm-hmm. But Marte is back. I expect Marte to continue pitching in big spots. And yeah, I think they'll probably swap Covey for a guy that you might want to use in more leverage spots, such as Andrew Bilotti or maybe Connor Brogdon. But Brogdon has been sort of so-so since he's been sent out to the minors. So Bilotti's had a few scoreless in a row. Maybe it's him. Maybe they keep Covey around as a long man. Like you said, Sanchez, some question there whether he, you know, will be fully full go for his next start, which is probably Friday. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like bigger, you know, like beyond like the last two spots in the bullpen, Paul. I mean, like, I think I like, you know, you sort of alluded to this. I mean, you know, you get frustrated when you think you have things figured out, you know, so, you know, talking about Andrew Vasquez, but have you figured this team out as a whole? I mean, they're 38 and 34. You know, they are on pace, you know, for about a high 80s win total, probably about right about where Vegas had them and where most people had them before the season started. It was a very circuitous route to this, you know, 4 games over .500, which is a season high. What do you make of the Phillies?
It's a great question. It's the right time to ask it because, you know, mid-June coming up on the halfway point, all that good stuff. look, there's no denying that they have played really, really good baseball the last 2 weeks. Like really good.
13-2 is good.
13-2 is really, really good, even though they've made up zero games in the division because of it, because Atlanta continues.
Is that what it is? Zero? Have they made
zero? Zero. Oh, zero. Games? No, Atlanta went 13-2 as well. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so there's no winning there.
I looked on the app yesterday afternoon, and the Braves were down like 4-0 early, and I was like, oh, maybe they'll, maybe the Braves lose a game today, and then what, they win like 15-6 or something.
They're
like
just absolutely, they're pummeling people. They've scored 111 runs in their last 15 games. They're absolutely destroying people. And in Miami, to their credit, the Phillies are only a game and a half up on Miami in those 15. I know, I'm waiting for Miami to fall off too. But that's reality. The Phillies have only gained a game and a half on Miami in that stretch. I'm looking at the NL standings in the last, what was it, since Friday, June the 2nd, when this run started for the Phillies. And the Braves and Phillies are at the top of the NL since that date. They're 13-2. They're clear of everybody else. And then Miami is tied for third. So you have the top three in the NL East right there, all playing great ball the last 2 weeks. And then at the very bottom, sandwiching this whole thing, you have the Mets at 3-10. And the Nationals at 2-11. So it's been a very bipolar couple of weeks, bipolar fortnight for the NL East. Getting back
the Phillies Mets path since that series at Citi Field is truly fascinating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they got swept and they got held to nothing. They couldn't score. And then anyway, let's hope there's more of that coming this week. But the Phillies have been playing better. You know, they won a series against the Nationals, which they should. They swept the Tigers, great. Won a series against the Dodgers, which was very good. I was very happy to see that. And then they really took it to the Diamondbacks, sort of. You know, they blew that bullpen game, like you were talking about. Then they came back the next night with a huge exclamation point. And then they had 2-1 run wins, which is fine. Didn't score a lot of runs out in Oakland, another 2-1 run wins. They're wins. Do not get me wrong. You need to bank wins. Wins get you to the playoffs. They're not very convincing wins. Something still feels a little bit off about this team right now to me, whether it's just me worrying about enough guys having the innings on the rotation side, whether it's me worrying about the lineup's depth and something like, you know, Brandon Marsh evaporating and, you know, what's Bryce Harper up to with, you know, his power drought now. He's still kind of fine, but not really. There's still things that linger in my head about this team. And even though they've been so good for the last 15 games, again, love it. Bank the wins. I can't help but feel like coming into this Braves series, they're still not, they don't have enough of that momentum to kind of push them through and make me feel like, yeah, they're in a good position to really take on Spencer Strider and, you know, the top of the Braves rotation and keep this lineup down. Like
Braves rookies who just keep pitching well
all the time, all the time.
Smith Shaver and Bryce Elder.
The other two
stars.
Sick of the Braves. Get the Braves out of here. I'm happy we play them less. No,
it's very Braves, right? To have a 20-year-old seventh rounder from high school who didn't start pitching until 3 years ago to now be in the major leagues and pitching well, right?
I'm gritting my teeth. I'm going to have no molars by the time we're done with this Braves series. I like it. The record now is what the record should be with this town, maybe even a little better. This is baseline what they should be at. It took a 13-2 stretch to get back there, but they're back there. They're on pace, like you said. I can't shake the feeling that there is something just so close to going, like throwing this team off. Maybe it's just another cold streak from one of the hitters. Like, what if, you know, Kyle Schwarber goes a little bit cold? Is it just irrational worry that surrounds this team right now? Should I just be a little bit more in the moment? Like, I can't figure out if I'm justified in thinking like, wow, 13-2, but ... Like, that seems insane on its face. Should I not be feeling like this?
No, I think that's reasonable. I would say this. Like, I say you have all these qualms that you've rightfully raised. And I would still look up and say, like, they're 38-34. And yes. I agree that they really haven't. outside of the stretch, I thought the Diamondback series was pretty good, and I know there were some close games. They hit the ball really, really hard, and there was probably a lot of runs that were left on the board. The Diamondbacks
That's true.
Tremendous outfield defense, and there were a lot of balls I thought was like, oh, this is a double, or that's a home run. It was not. What a weird ballpark, by the way, too. How many triples would JT Realmuto have if he played 81 games at Chase Field?
That left center field power alley, man, that's got to be a dream.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree. I think in a lot of ways too, though, you're looking for them to, you want them to do better than Treadwater, but like you're trying to get to this All-Star break with, you know, that four man rotation without the best alignment in your lineup. And we keep getting messages that, you know, Harper from Rob Thompson, that Bryce Harper's first base move, it's probably not happening until later in July. And they keep saying all after the break, but very clearly the most optimized Phillies lineup and defensive arrangement has Harper at first base and Kyle Schwarber at DH. Schwarber has been the worst defensive player in baseball this season. It's not close. It's bad. Both in the advanced metrics and the eye test. And I think once they get to that point where they can optimize the lineup a little better, I do think this will feel different.
Okay.
That's not I know that seems like such a small thing, but I think it opens up a lot of different things for them. Getting Bohm to third base, and now you no longer have to play Edmundo Sosa, who's been totally exposed. I can't remember. He has 42 strikeouts and 2 walks. That is insane.
That's really
he got exposed. I mean, like, he's a solid bench guy. He's a solid start me once or twice a week. Bring me in late in the game if you need a defensive replacement or an at bat against a lefty. Like, he's good at that. But he's very clearly exposed. And Cody Clemens, who's done fine, you know, will also be exposed at some point. And I think he's a fine bench player too.
Yeah.
But we're clearly seeing that. The best lineup has Bohm at third, Harper at first, Schwarber at DH, and, you know, mystery man in left field. And whether that's internal or external acquisition, that I think will help this team a lot. And
Well,
I mean, but I think my biggest takeaway, Paul, from last week is the pitching has righted itself, especially the rotation.
Yes.
And that has to be the thing that people hang on to here. You have to be really, really encouraged by that, specifically Ranger Suarez, who I thought is his start against Diamondbacks was absolutely fantastic. Just what the different things he was doing. Taijuan Walker, I have no idea. He's like,
you and me both,
he's
man.
Figured it out, I guess. And he keeps attributing it to, now that he's doing different workouts between starts, he's taking ground balls because he's just moving around more.
Sure.
It is absolutely bizarre. And I've never heard this before, but
whatever,
you have to feel good about that. And like Wheeler did not have his best stuff the last two, but you look up and there it is, like he made it work.
Yes.
So that's the thing I think you have to feel really good about, because when they were winning before and you're like, ah man, like rotation, like how do you keep winning with this kind of rotation? Well, the rotation in the last 2 weeks has been a huge development for them, and that's the thing that you have to be optimistic about.
Yep. No, I think that's very fair, you know, and that's a good grounding call out, right? We spent a lot of time early this season worrying about the state of the rotation when the injuries kind of piled up late in spring. And then as the game started, you know, we got a couple of weeks in and we're like, oh boy, losing the Painter option, losing Ranger for a while, having, you know, Wheeler and Nola come out slow out of the gate, Walker hobbling out of the gate. Things started to look a little bit dicey. And then as the bigger league picture came into focus, you're like, well, where are the reinforcements going to come from? Because everybody needs starting pitching. Things looked a little iffy, we'll be generous. But you're absolutely right. Things have been better, much better in the rotation the last couple of weeks. It's a shame that it took until now, I guess, or at least the last couple of weeks, to really kick into gear. Maybe part of that is, you know, the extended season hangover, whatever it is. I don't know. Bunch of different things. It's great, and it's been a stabilizer, especially when the team has, you know, struggled to score runs a couple of times, which they have. They've won a couple of close, low scoring games that the April rotation probably, there's a good chance they don't hold that.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's good. And that is reason to be optimistic. As long as the health holds up, which is always the big thing, this season is no different that way. As long as the guys stay healthy, I'd love to get to the All-Star break with a healthy rotation. I feel like that's a big deal. And then we can start thinking about potential reinforcements, guys who might be a little bit more ready. It feels a little bit less of an emergency. I mean, the fifth starting pitcher spot is still kind of iffy. Like, I need to see Chris Sanchez back it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did against the A's. Although it was good. I mean, like, it looked good.
It was.
It was better, yeah.
You hope his wrist isn't bothering him as much by the next turn of the rotation. I think they're going to give him an extra day, buy him an extra day for that to get a little better, I think. Or maybe it's just with the off day.
They really pushed Wheeler, on Sunday, and it was because the bullpen was short, and he didn't have his best stuff at the end, and they pushed him. I think they really do not want him to start Friday.
Okay.
That would be his fifth day. Instead, give him that sixth day, have him start Saturday, and have Sanchez pitch Friday, if he can.
That would make sense. Yeah.
We'll see how it manifests.
Okay. I could see that. That would make a lot of sense to me. That's good. I mean, right now it's in a good spot. They have five guys who you could consider starting pitchers of varying quality. And, that's more than you could. That's more than you could say at a lot of points earlier this season, So at least there's that.
Sure is.
Yeah, they still need help. Don't get me wrong. But what hasn't changed is you don't know where that help is going to come from. And it's going to be another case of waiting until later in the summer to really get a feel for, can they keep up this run? Maybe not playing, 800 baseball for, more weeks at a time. But can they keep it up to the point where they're still contending in this wild card spot? I'm not thinking about the division right now. You have to sweep Atlanta right now to really even start thinking about the division chase again. We're just about solidifying wild card spot right now. But they're going to want to reinforce this team. They clearly don't have all of the depth pieces internally to make it work. If guys go down, like, something's going to change. There's going to be some import that comes in and helps them out. We just don't know who that's going to be yet, where it's going to come
probably
from.
More of a fringe acquisition though, right? I mean, I think you're looking at this point and we talked about earlier on the podcast, I don't know if it was last one or two ago, but if you do end up being able to execute that maneuver where Bohm goes to third, Harper goes to first, Schwarber goes to DH, then you do have a spot in left field that is, sitting there for a on-base skilled right-handed hitter.
I mean, it'd be cool. Don't get me wrong. I think what needs to get sorted out in the meantime is what the hell is happening in center field. Like, what happened to Brandon Marsh, and can Christian Pache make it work until they decide, whether to look at corner bat or what have you, because the bummer about Brandon Marsh is he got off to this really great start. You knew it was going to come down a little bit just because it was so unsustainably hot, but the things that were going into it made it look more real. It made it seem like the fall was going to be cushioned when it came. And instead it has not been. It hasn't been. Lately, it's just been bad. So Christian Pache comes back, I think, sooner than I was expecting, but I'm glad to see him back. He had a good series out in Oakland. Obviously, the book on him by now, even just in that short look. Terrific defender. Not really sure what you're going to get on offense, but he's showing glimpses. Look, there has been a quiet sort of, I'll call it a lack of a vote of confidence in Brandon Marsh going on through almost this whole season. Even as he started hot and we're getting into May, getting on into June, and his season numbers are still okay, even as he's starting to slide, he's still being batted in the lower third of the order, or like no higher than sixth. There was always something in the back of my mind where I look at where he's hitting. He's getting sat against, the tougher left-handers still. Batting in the lower third, I'm like, they don't buy it. Somebody over there doesn't buy it. There is something bothering them about what Brandon Marsh is doing that is not letting them really buy into this and even try him when they were struggling so much with the top two spots in the order. He never got a look there.
Nope.
And now it's all gone away, and you're like, oh, what did they know? What were they cooking? And it worries me that he's going to go poof, and maybe it's part confidence, part mechanics. I don't know. It feels like a confirmation bias kind of thing, that what they saw early in the year, they proved out by batting him low and giving him limited looks. And now it's kind of being like, oh, well, this is what they saw. Am I imagining things?
No, you're not at all. Okay, no. All right. No, I think the overall picture, we look at a guy now, he's about 10% better than league average. And I think if that is what he is over the course of an entire season at the plate, I think they're okay with that. Would you be okay with that?
Sure.
Yeah.
But the way he's gotten like, there not, makes you wonder.
Yeah. The way he got there was, bizarre. I mean, the last 2 months have not been good. And this is actually, I have a little notes column. By the time you're listening to this, it's probably going to be up on The Athletic. And one of the things I discuss is center field and Marsh specifically. And he's definitely, look, I mean, like he had a great April and you're like, okay, what's the adjustment that teams are going to make on him? And it ended up being fewer fastballs. And it's like, okay, what's the adjustment Marsh makes now? And it turns out he hasn't made it yet. I mean, he's really caught in between. He started thinking, he talked about this to me. He started guessing a little more because he's like, in fastball counts, he was getting fastballs in April because teams wanted to see if he could hit them. He did not hit fastballs last year. Mm-hmm. He proved that he could hit them. And now he starts to get breaking balls in fastball counts. And now he gets off the heater. And then he starts seeing more heaters, come June. And he hasn't. This is a crazy thing for me. I think it's right. I hope it's right. He has his last hit on a fastball was June 11th. That was a Dodgers series. His last extra base hit on a fastball was May 31.
Oh, no.
Double against the Mets. So he's gotten this entire month without an extra base hit against a fastball. He's really caught in between. Like he made his mark in April by hitting fastballs, by taking the breaking balls out of the zone. He's definitely expanded the zone a little more. There's a lot of bad trends. And you're right. Pache came back earlier than I expected. I was pretty surprised to see him activate. I thought they were going to use his entire 20 days in the minors to get him as many ABs as they could before bringing him back to the active roster. And I think it was solely about the fact that they were going to face two lefties over the weekend in Oakland.
Yeah.
They ended up, because Castellanos had the stomach bug, they ended up having Marsh ended up playing on Sunday against a lefty. Probably wouldn't have if Castellanos was healthy. But they now face righties for the next 6 days. The whole homestand is scheduled to be right-handed starting pitchers. So we'll see how much Pache plays, but I think he might get a start or two. Just because Marsh has really dug himself a hole here. And I think he's accurately diagnosed the situation. So that's a good start. He talked about how stubborn, how angry he was about his stubbornness, to kind of not see the bigger picture. He had a great exchange and Marsh likes to mess with me. I appreciate that. He said I'm just going to simplify. I'm going to go back to 2+2. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, whoa, is that some sort of advanced hitting mantra or technique or whatever? I was like, what's 2+2? And he looked at me, he said 4. And I was like, oh, I get it. So he's going back to 2+2. And he's an interesting cat. Yeah. So Pache is going to get a shot. And yeah, you're right. I mean, how they look at left field, post Schwarber, does depend on how you think about center field. The defense, Pache's defense is better. I don't think there's any questioning it.
Nope. No just question.
In three games, you saw it. I mean, he's really good out there. He's really good. I'm not sold, 35 plate appearances. I think you mentioned this, Paul, is people were really excited to see Christian Pache back.
So excited. Oh my God.
I get it. I mean, there were some encouraging things and he got hurt at a really, tough time for him. Cause he was just starting to, he was just starting to figure something out, but I'm not sold. The larger, track record suggests that he's not going to be a hitter in the majors, but maybe he figured it out. I don't know. And I think they are intrigued and I think he will get some time here.
He leads the team in OPS.
What about Drew Ellis? He's not.
No, he's got him by 10 points. Oh. 929-919.
I think if you want to get into real deep roster minutia, I think, it was an emergency situation. They didn't have Castellanos for a few days and they needed a right-handed batter to play right field. And like Josh Harrison can't play right field, and like that, you know, he messed up a few balls, and it's like, well, Dalton Guthrie could have played right field, and whatever you think about Guthrie, and I think he, you know, he needs to go down and like just play every day for like 2 weeks because he has barely played, and that's the luxury you want with your bench guys. It's like, oh, we can send this guy out after not playing him for about a month. He'll go get at bees every day and try to get his timing right, and just and then be ready for us to call him back up when we need him again. So you do that, I get it, but I don't know. Harrison's presence is getting to be a bigger problem.
Yeah, well, now we're at a point like when you talk about somebody who gets a guaranteed deal, even if it's just a 1 year deal for, you know, a part time role, and that's obvious, you know, they make in the low to mid seven figures, whatever it is, as Harrison's doing. You know that they're not going to get the boot early in the year just because they guaranteed the guy money. They want to give him a look. It's usually a veteran. There's a place for this guy at the outset in the early season strategy of the way the roster is built. But as the season goes on, sunk cost becomes less of a thing, especially when you're only talking about like $1 million or $2. And Harrison's place on this roster is definitely tenuous at this point. We're reaching midseason, and he hasn't quite been the producer I think they were hoping.
He's stayed around because he hits right-handed. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. Like, Jake Cave has been great. Everyone's like, when are they going to call up Jake Cave? Well, he bats left-handed, and there's like another lefty. There is not a need for him right now, as good as he's been, and the numbers in AAA are
astounding,
unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, they're insane. I mean, his power output is just obscene. And look, like, Derek Hall is going to have to be activated this week, and I do not think that he will return to the majors. I expect him to stay in the minors because they like what Clemens has done. And yeah, I mean, I'll buy that. Will you?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I think that's fine. I think that makes sense. You know, it's a shame that so many of these reinforcements all lean a certain way at the plate.
All bat left-handed.
They all bat left-handed. And there's a little
except
bit of that
Pache.
In the
line.
Yeah, except
Pache
for
Pache.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why he's going to be around.
So that's a bit of a shame, but you get it. It's a problem you like to have. You know, it's funny. I think back to one of the quotes around the time of the Astros releasing JD Martinez back in the day, you know, 10, 12 years ago, however long it was ago at this point, where they said they were victims of their own success. You know, they just had too many guys for these options. They non-tendered JD Martinez, and what does he do? He goes on to Detroit and just, you know, the rest is history. It blows up from there. And that's kind of what's happening here.
Yeah, I mean, Simone Muziotti, another guy who's, you know, played really well at AAA, also bats left-handed.
Yes, he does. I love Simone. I hope he gets a shot somewhere. That would be nice because I think he can play. It's really just one of those, you know, it's a luxury for the Phillies at this point to have all of these options. It's just finding the right combination to make it work.
Be great if one of them hit right-handed.
It would be amazing. It would be great. And I think that's why the priority is going to stay, you know, right-handed bat. Yes. I think what makes things interesting, or what would make things interesting, there's no reason to believe you won't, but you have to go contingency, is if Harper can't make first base work until, you know, when the deadline arrives, if he's still not ready to go.
Yeah, you'd be making moves on a real, a leap of faith almost, right?
Which you can't
be
do.
Like, yeah, well, maybe you have to, though.
Oh, that's... we can think more
about
that
a little
later.
But we're talking about getting a complimentary right-handed bat. It's not like they'd be selling the farm for that kind of acquisition, right?
Well, it would certainly rule out a move like that because you can't take that much more risk if you're already, you know, on a risky premise. Like, you can just totally rule out a big move at that point because you're not gonna make an import like that if you can't trust the complimentary move to fall in alongside.
I don't think they're gonna be making big moves here. I really don't.
It's not likely. It's not likely, but I can't rule it out, right? I don't know.
Yeah, you can't
rule it out,
but I just don't know what that big move is because
exactly
again, like they're pretty locked. I'm gonna say they're locked. They're locked in. They really are. I mean, like, they're locked in. You're not gonna make a big move for a fifth starter because, you know, that guy is, I don't know. I mean, like, you have three or four guys you would trust in a postseason game right now. You have three, I think. I don't know how I feel about Taiwan Walker, but
three is fair.
Yeah. Is Aaron, what game would Aaron Nola start in a postseason series right now?
Two.
Yeah.
I'd start a second and go Ranger third. Not a knock on Ranger. I don't know. Something about Wheeler and Nola Suarez.
That's what I would do too, but I was seeing what you were going
to
say.
Yeah, that speaks to me. I won't argue with anybody who would go Ranger, especially if Ranger keeps this up, because he's good. And if Nola's in kind of his weird little pendulum states, then yeah, maybe you ride the hot hand.
Right. I mean, yeah, right now, if you're unable to pull the lever that puts Harper at first and Bohm at third and Schwarber at DH and opens that spot, then yes, you're boxed in severely.
Yeah.
Then you start thinking about third base. Right? I mean, because you figure Bohm will play mostly first, Harper DHs, Schwarber's in left, and then you try to upgrade third base. Or yeah, I guess you try to upgrade first base with a righty. I don't know. I mean, like, they looked for right-handed hitting first baseman months ago, and they found very little. So, you know, I don't know. So, yeah, you have options. But, I mean, really, you want to be able to pull that lever that gets you the corner outfield spot, because that's an easier path to go.
Probably, yeah. As far as the week ahead is concerned, the Phillies are off today, Monday, of course. They get to rest up before this little six-game homestand against division foes. It's a big week. It could be interesting, depending on how this Atlanta series goes. If the Phillies manage to pull off a sweep, they'll be within 5 games of Atlanta, which, hey, that's pretty good. Then you can start thinking about the division again. The tough thing about 3-game series, of course, is you drop one. The most you can pick up in a series is 1 game, and then they end the 3-game series upset. It would be nice to get a sweep. Let's put it that way. And then the Mets come along over the weekend.
The Mets.
The Mets have not been playing well, and they're in kind of a weird spot. I think one that Phillies fans from this season can kind of empathize with, as much as you want to empathize with the Mets, in that there's a lot of talent on that roster, and it's just not performing the way you thought it was or would. But at some point it could kick in. There's a lot of good baseball players on that team, and maybe it happens over the weekend. I don't know. You can't take them lightly. And something strange always happens in Phillies Mets series. We've been over this. So it's a big week. And especially because the Phillies are facing the best of the current Braves rotation. You know, Max Fried is hurt, so you won't see him, but you're going to see Spencer Strider, and you know, that's going to be a challenge.
I mean, that'd be kind of fun. It's going to be a huge crowd. I mean, school is mostly out here. I think they have huge crowds this week. I mean, obviously for the Mets weekend, I'm sure they're sold out. These Braves midweek games, though, like, I think they're going to have really, really big crowds. And it should be fun. What are the Phillies going to do? Paul, what are the Phillies going to do? They are going to face the Braves, and they're not going to see Charlie Culberson. Did you see this? Do you know this? No, Charlie Culberson. Did you know this? He had been called up on May 19th by the Braves and got DFA'd yesterday. He had not appeared in a game the entire month. Not once. He didn't even get on the field for defense.
Wait, he was on the active roster
for 1 month and did not appear in a game.
What?
Yes.
I completely missed this. Are you serious?
I think it's one of the greatest roster feats ever.
What in the world? Boy, and we're talking about Dylan Covey. What were they doing with him? Why didn't they use him once? What is that? What is the story there?
I don't know.
Okay, well, good for him getting a month's worth of major league paychecks, but like, what? Oh, that's fascinating. Oh, I was like, does he mean Charlie Morton? What?
No, I meant Charlie Culberson. So for comparison,
like, why is Charlie Culberson coming up? Oh my god,
for fascinating. For comparison's sake, while we're talking, I looked this up. Through 72 games, Phillies are 38-34. They're 8 games back. Last year, through 72 games, they were 37-35, so 1 game worse, and they were 9 games back. It's a very, very similar spot. This is right at the time.
It's annoying.
Harper got hurt in the 73rd game. So they're through 72 games. Harper broke his thumb in game 73. Just for perspective here, I mean, that's like, we hadn't even, you know, we get into that spot, in that part of the season. And it was those 2 months there where the Phillies, I thought, really took off. And, you know, they were like 10 over without Bryce, and different guys stepped up. And they really, I think, you know, formed this sort of character that that helped them into October. So just for context, like, that's the part of the season now that we're entering here. And really interested to see how they stack up against the Braves and Mets at home. And I've talked about this numerous times. I still think the best series the Phillies have played all year was that series in Atlanta, where they split 4 games and very easily could have won 3 out of 4. And I thought they played them really well. I did.
They did. Boy, it's making me think back to, you know, that time last year. What was such a huge reason why that team stayed in it when Harper went down? The role players stepped up, right?
Yep.
You know, you look at the Matons and Vierlings who are now in Detroit. It's funny, you were talking about Brandon Marsh with the pitching adjustment. It made me think of Nick Maton, who almost never sees a fastball out there similarly. But the role players stepped up. The guys on the bench stepped up. You know, Garrett Stubbs really emerged as like kind of a cult hero guy, you know, in the middle of the summer last year. I think that was around the time he had his walk-off home run. It's probably shortly after Harper got injured, if I'm remembering right. It's probably somewhere
in there. I
think so. But now's the time, you know, it's a slightly different cast, but you can think about maybe Edmundo Sosa finds something that can get him back in gear a little bit. Maybe Cody Clemens keeps it up and solidifies his spot on the roster. Maybe it's somebody else who's down in the minor leagues right now who has to come up because of an injury we don't know about yet that might happen. Whatever the case is, the role players have to pick it up a little bit, especially while Harper's having his power outage that he's going through. You know, Castellanos has been out with a stomach bug. It's no joke. The norovirus this year. Watch out for that, man. It's a bad one. I'm not surprised he's been down for a couple of days. Turner's been better lately, which has helped. But the lower half of the order, it's got to step up the way it did last year if they want to stay in this and keep their footing. Because the National League, there's a lot of parity. We'll call it parity.
There's six in the National League today.
Yeah, and there's going to be challengers, but they're only a couple games clear. You know, you look at Pittsburgh within four games, and there are two teams between, well, three teams really, between Pittsburgh and the Phillies. There's still that bunching. There's a lot of bunching going on.
The Reds.
Look out for the Reds, man. The Reds are fun. That is a fun baseball team.
If I told you Marlins, Giants, Reds, Pirates, like which one are you buying stock in for the rest of the year? The Reds,
Marlins, Giants, Reds, Pirates.
Yeah,
is what we're talking about.
Yeah,
talk about things that frustrate me. We're still talking about the Giants.
Seven in a row. They just put their best pitcher on the IL, though.
Oh, Logan Webb hurt.
Cobb. Oh wow. Second best pitcher.
Whatever. The Reds have a really cool lineup. I think the pitching kind of comes and goes for them right now, but those guys stepping up to the plate are really interesting to me. Not a lot of names. I think maybe apart from, you know, Ellie De La Cruz came up with a lot of hype and like a lot of people are going to know about him soon. Jonathan India is having a nice season. Spencer Steer is another, you know, rookie of the year contender type who's having a really nice year. Matt McLain has arrived as another rookie who's looked really good.
Crazy the Phillies got all their games of the Reds out of the way before all this happened.
Yes. I mean, they still had to face, you know, Jake Fraley, who got hurt, but is also having a nice year. You look at TJ Friedl, a nice contributor out of almost nowhere, who's putting up a good year. Like, they have a lot of really nice contributors in that lineup. I think, you know, depending on what you think about the likes of Hunter Green, as is he a budding ace, or is he just, you know, an overpowering arm who can lose it from time to time? What do you make of the rest of the rotation? I think there are serious questions about their pitching, but I love the way the Reds hit. So I would probably buy them, even though they're a couple games back of the Giants while we're recording today, 2.5 games back. I would buy the Reds. I think the Reds are probably the stiffest competition right now for the Phillies in the wild card.
Did you know that the Marlins are 12-0 against the Nationals, A's, and Royals? And those 12 wins represent 30% of their wins this season.
And that and the one run games thing with them, I'm not buying the
18
Marlins.
And five.
I'm just not into games. It. No.
Yeah, I think everyone can see it for what it is. And it's still impressive. I mean, they're 10 games over 500.
Right. They have a guy who might hit 400. That's cool.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is they've done it. And Alcantara has not been great. You know,
right.
I mean, he hasn't even been good. He's been bad, actually. Yuri Perez is good. Yeah, I mean, that's the Marlins. The Phillies will see them right before the All-Star break in Miami. And yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. I'm probably buying stock in the Reds, Giants. I'm not. Yeah. But there's just all these teams in the middle, like the Diamondbacks. We just saw them. Mm-hmm. We're not really sure about them. The Brewers, I don't think are good.
I don't know.
It's weird. Division is weird. The Dodgers, Phillies are only one game back of the Dodgers right now.
I don't like anything about the NL Central. I don't like anything about it. I like nothing about it except the Reds lineup. There's so much nonsense happening in that division right now. The Cardinals being absolutely terrible is wild to me. I never thought I'd live to see that day. But I don't buy the Brewers. it almost feels like, and I think we brought this up maybe in passing, it feels like they might be one of those teams that would trade Corbin Burns even in the midst of a playoff hunt. Like, they could be leading the division. They might trade Corbin Burns, which is gonna going be to be hysterical.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine? Eagerly awaiting that day. I don't like the Central. I think that's part of why I buy the Reds, is that the Reds lineup is the most interesting thing in that whole division to me.
Central end up hosting the wild card series. The winner of the Central.
Yay, playoffs. Well, anyway, I like the Phillies' chances against anybody in that division as things stand right now. That's about as confident as I'll get about the Phillies in the playoffs at the moment, because again, still can't really shake. Something needs to, I want to see a little bit more. I want to see a nice follow-up series against the Braves here. That'll go a long way.
This probably describes the National League the best right now. There are six teams with a positive run differential, and two of them have a losing record. That's the NL right now.
You are on such a roll with these notes.
Like, but I mean, I'm just looking at the standings right now, and it's ridiculous. Like, what is happening in this league?
It's bad. It's fascinating. It's sort of unbelievable on its face. That's the National League. Get excited.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm excited. Look, the Phillies are playing good ball. Absolutely nothing bad to say about that. They are four games over 500. Yay! High watermark for the season. And they're taking all the momentum they could possibly muster into a big series with the Braves, and then they'll play the Mets. And we'll see where things stand the next time we check in with all of you, sometime around this time next week, where hopefully things have improved in their divisional and wildcard standings before they head out into Illinois to face the Cubs and Wrigley for a short series.
Happy belated Father's Day.
Thank you. You as well. I'm excited for this week. I'm excited that the Phillies continue to get challenged throughout their schedule, basically through the next 3 weeks.
Through the break. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That Florida trip will be fun. The Rays and the Marlins.
Yeah.
A week in Florida in July. What is better than that?
Are you going? You're going to be down there for that?
I will be there for that whole
time. Attaboy. All right. Well, tell me how it goes. Let me know if the humidity gets under 85%.
We'll probably do a podcast.
Oh, is that what we do?
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Big division week coming up. Phillies are playing good baseball. Tune in. If you haven't tuned in as much lately, well, now's a good time to. Check it out.
Enjoy the games. More West Coast games until September.
Yeah, that's all done. You don't need to fall asleep watching this team anymore, you know, unless things go bad in the Atlanta series. Things pick up on Tuesday. Three gamers. All at home. Crowds are going to be great. You just know it. Go out to the park if you can. Pick up a ticket. Get a little StubHub action. Make your voice heard. Outnumber those Mets fans, please. Just do that for me as a favor. Go read Matt's stuff on The Athletic. His news and notes should be posted by the time you're listening to this. Always good stuff. You can tell just by the stuff he shared today. Blowing my mind left and right. Which is wonderful. Thanks as always to Matt for saving some of that good stuff for the show. We'll catch you this time next week. For Matt, I am Paul. We'll see you then.